Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. This episode today, I'm really looking forward to because I have, as well as my co-host, a guest who is very similar. I think they're gonna love each other. They're gonna really get along. Our guest today, Nick Richards. He's a brown belt out of the Gold Coast. He has his own gym there, a not-for-profit gym called Seventh Circle. He's a brown belt. He's an entrepreneur. And he is our guest today. We're really looking forward to getting to know him. He also has his own clothing company, jiu-jitsu clothing company called Jitsi Club. And, yeah, we're looking forward to getting to know him. So thanks very much for joining us, Nick.
No, it's my pleasure. Great to be on here.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And you're on the GC, the sunny place for shady people. That's what I've heard about that.
I know. Don't let the Botox and steroids fool you.
Now, Anton's from the Gold Coast originally. You're from Melbourne. Moved to the Gold Coast and then back to Melbourne.
That's right. Yeah? I lived there for 10 years. I started jiu-jitsu on the Gold Coast and I loved it, man. Did you start your jiu-jitsu journey on the Gold Coast?
Yeah, I did. I started at Full Metal in Burley.
Ah.
Where did you start?
Yeah, we've had that guy. What's that guy's name? I've forgotten his name.
Guts.
Yes, he's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
All right.
So tell us about that. How did you get started in jiu-jitsu? What piqued your interest?
Yeah, sure. So I was never a particularly athletic guy naturally. I never played sport at school. I didn't play sport as a kid. I had a heart surgery as a kid. So I think a combination of that and my parents being incredibly cautious meant I didn't pick up sport till I was probably like 25. And I did a little bit of like Krav Maga, unfortunately. and then... Which is cool because I can take an AK-47 off someone, but I have no idea how to wrestle. And then I just decided to do jiu-jitsu, I think, because if you do a striking martial art, it's really hard to go at a high level for a long time without getting brain damage, whereas I felt that you can wrestle your mates pretty hard and you probably only do your knees. And that was 9 years ago, I think, and we're going today.
That's brilliant. That's another thing we have in common. My son had heart surgery at 3 months old as well, so... And then he went on to take up jiu-jitsu and then did very well for himself while he was a young whippersnapper. Yeah, I've been right through that system. And the support and the care out of Brisbane, like the doctors in Brisbane are second to none in the entire world for heart surgery, it turns out. So it was just
Still here. So they must have been pretty good. That was a while. That was in 1986 though. So hopefully the tech's better.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. So what impact does that have?
Can you tell us about that, Nick?
Yeah.
About the surgery?
Yeah. So I can answer both of those. So I was born with a condition called transposition of the great vessels, which is basically where the bit that pumps between the heart and the lungs was separate from the bit that pumps the rest of the body. So at 9 days old, they were basically like, look, we can give this a go, or that's really the only option. So they gave it a go and it worked, and I am still here. The only, I guess, downside I have now is I will just always have shitty cardio, which is a small price to pay. But
so you're a normal brown belt then?
It bothered me a lot more till I got my brown belt, and now it's mysteriously not a problem anymore. But you work around it, right? It just sucks when you get an athletic 20-year-old and you just have to rip their knee off to slow them down.
That sucks for all of us, whether we have a heart condition or not. Let me tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And so did your doctor say don't do jiu-jitsu or anything like that? Is there any of that sort of stuff?
Or limitations to exercise or anything? Or
no. It was sort of a weird repair they did. So there's not a lot of data on it. So I just go back once a year, and they seem to be of the approach that they're just not going to touch anything and just keep doing what you're doing. And if anything changes, let us know. So yeah, there's not really any limitations. I just get tired a lot faster than people. But other than that, just carry on.
Okay. And tell us about Seventh Circle, man. Like how did it start and what does it focus on?
Yeah. So a few of us got together and decided to set this gym up in that we're all colored belts. We've all been training for at least 5 years. And we we all had really busy lives. And so we didn't want, I find a lot of traditional jiu-jitsu class structures, there's like a lot of time wasting and sort of dicking around. So we sort of went, okay, everyone's time poor. How can we constrain our formula of training down to like just the juicy stuff? So we only train 3 nights a week for about 2 hours. And it's just in there, some techniques someone wants to work on, then just positional rolling and sparring. And we're really heavy on everyone cross trains who's in the gym. They all drop into other gyms. And other gyms drop into us a lot. And so that's really what we focused on, is more community. For a while, we didn't have any new people. It was like no white belts, just because we didn't have the capacity to safely onboard people. Not because we were being dicks, but we've sort of found our ground now. And so we'll get a few new people in, but it's very much not designed for new people. Like, we don't have an on-ramp program. We don't do any of that shit. You got to sort that out yourself, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really fun, because so I've got a young child as well. So you can get in there 3 nights a week, just scrap, work on stuff you want to work on. It's all very democratic, no gi only. Someone will say, hey, I'm having trouble with this, and we'll just spend the class fixing that problem, essentially.
Yeah,
and how does the fee structure work? Like, being as a not-for-profit, like, do you charge mat fees, or how does it work?
Yeah, so what happened with that is, like, so my background's business and finance. And when I looked at just jiu-jitsu and martial arts gyms and gyms across the board, the thing that kind of derails a lot of them is money, and that it's really difficult to create a profitable gym in many, like, it's really hard. When I say profitable, I mean like a big money earning gym. So we all have other jobs. So we're like, why don't we just remove that element completely and set up an association, like an incorporated not-for-profit. And then all we've got to do is cover our insurance and our rent, and it doesn't matter. So it's just $15 a class, and that's it.
Mm, interesting. Okay. And so the students love that model. Like, they're like, this is, you found the magic bullet, or like, is that?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard because I think it would be difficult for newer students, where you need the structure to understand movements and to get technically proficient. Now, we've got a couple of guys who've trained with us from day one, and they're getting really good. People who have trained for a while, and so I'd say like high blue belts, low purple belts and up, like the structure, because they know what they want to work on and stuff they need to fix. And so it's really just having the time to sit down with a bunch of people and work it out. And we'll look at, like, we'll watch the ADCC and be like, what did everyone hit there? Okay, let's try to figure that out. Or whenever there's a seminar on the coast of Brisbane, we'll send someone, and their job is to steal all the information and come back and teach it to everyone for the next 2 weeks, which everyone does anyway. So let's not pretend that's not what everyone does at seminars. And it's just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, nice.
But do your members also train elsewhere, or a lot of them are just training with you guys?
Most of them will drop into open mats at other gyms once a week at least. Or maybe they also casually train at other gyms too. It just varies on their time and how enthusiastic they are and whether they want to train more than 3 days a week.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good, like, I'm interested in different models as well, for sure. Cause I think that's like, there is like, everybody needs their tribe, their way of things that work for them. So I'm sure it works well. Do any of you guys compete? Do you know if this?
Yeah. A couple of the boys compete pretty well. I don't compete. I'm too old and don't care anymore. but we're not sort of focused on competitions either, because like, we really just love the sport and enjoy rolling with lots of different people and meeting people. So the whole gym's aimed in that direction rather than competitions. I mean, if a whole bunch of people said, yeah, we want to compete this year, we'd sort of restructure how we trained. But at the moment, it's really just big community, getting better, having fun.
Mm.
How long have you been around for?
Probably 18 months.
Okay, so at the beginning, was it like, how did that go for you? Like, even covering the rent and the insurance, like, was that possible or?
So initially, we started in my spare room at home, like, it was just sort of a rumpus room, and then we realized that some walls or sliding doors were going to get destroyed if we stayed there for any length of time, and then it was definitely difficult initially because maybe there'd be 3 of us or 4 of us training, so you know. was probably break even or a little bit below. But we all like we also chipped a bit of cash in, and we sort of like got through it until we got like a stable member base. Members, even the wrong word, like cohort base, I guess. And it's fine, you know, like we cover our costs and there's a little bit left over. So if we want to, I don't know, we haven't worked out what to do with that yet, I guess. Maybe go buy some beers.
All right. And what about the clothing label? Like, what was the motivation behind jiu-jitsu clothing? It's just, it's such a small market. I love that people do it, but it certainly, it can't be a big money-making exercise.
Okay. So this is, I'm going to come out with some words of advice. So every blue belt wants to start an apparel brand. It seems like it's just part of when you get it, you just like get these ideas and you're like, man, no one's making rash guards. So like, that's the first thing that happened.
Yeah.
The second thing that happened was no one would sponsor me because I wasn't very good as a blue belt.
Yeah.
And this infuriated me. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to have to do this myself. And it started as kind of a joke with my buddy based on the meta that every blue belt starts an apparel brand. And we imported a bunch of finger tape. Just like I was a gi player back then and finger tape was cool in like 2017. And we just kept at it, basically. Because my background is entrepreneurship and corporate banking, and my business partner is a graphic designer and brand guy. So we probably had a leg up in the sense that we had a really good skill set. We just chipped away at it for years. It was kind of a hobby, like it never made any money. But then we got the license for Stranger Things in 2020 or 2021 from Netflix. And that really kind of changed our position. Then last year we got the license for Cobra Kai. We've got some three really big properties we're going to release this year. And then we just kept kind of scaling up and getting a little bit bigger and trying things. And look, there's been so many disasters, I can't count, but we're still alive and it gets a bit bigger every year. And we've kind of found our niche in the brand. Like when I look at a lot of jiu-jitsu apparel, it's really aimed, it's a weird thing, right? It's really aimed at athletes. So a lot of the brands are like, man, you will be the next ADCC world champion if you wear these shirts, which is interesting because most of the people that have money aren't professional athletes. So we approached it differently and decided like, why don't we just make a really cool, like everyman brand where you see someone else wearing jitsu gear at a seminar or you're an open mat and you're like, okay, that guy's probably okay. That guy's pretty cool. And so our philosophy was around like really interesting design and interesting products rather than like trying to get the biggest athletes on board to kind of imply that you too could be a world champion with enough steroids and rash guards.
With enough steroids and rash guards. All right. There's a title for the podcast. Anything's possible with enough steroids and rash guards.
Lord knows I've tried.
How long has that been going for, Nick, that the clothing brand?
5 years in July.
Oh.
Yeah, we started in 2019. We would have started like when we like got serious and made a company rather than like just sort of ordering stuff and trying to sell it.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. And would you do it again if you had your time?
Yeah, I'd do it again, but I'd just dick around way less. Like we've figured out how to do it now. And obviously you have to go through the process in order to figure out how to do it. But in retrospect, we probably wasted 3 years experimenting on stuff that was never going to work.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to dish out some free advice to anyone running or starting an apparel brand, which good is idea. Like limit the number of things you sell. Limit your SKUs is my first bit of advice. Because our biggest fuck up that, am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Our biggest fuck up that wasn't my fault to date, was just a general fuck up, it was when we did our first ranked range. We're like, everyone needs ranked gear. Everyone loves ranked gear. No one likes ranked gear except blue belts, it turns out. But like,
wow.
Because like you get a blue belt, you want to show the world. By the time you're a brown belt, you don't care anymore. You're just hanging out with your black belt. And so like we ordered 6 sizes, 5 ranks, long sleeve, short sleeve, women's cut, kids. So SKUs alone, that's over 100 SKUs. So if you have 3 items per SKU, now you have 300 items of stock. And they're not all going to sell uniformly. So we ended up with just this giant pile of ranked rash guards that no one was really buying because only blue belts care about. And so my biggest thing would be to people is like, pick a few designs that you just think are absolute bangers and double down on them and have depth. Because people will come to your store and they're like, man, I want this rash guard. Oh, it's not an extra large, and leave. And you've spent this money and time acquiring this customer. And then they don't buy anything and you've essentially burnt that ad spend to bring them in. Mm. And even if you've got like a notify me, like tick box thing, they won't come back. Like the conversion on that's like 20% on a good day.
Interesting.
So that's what I'd say. But my biggest fuck up was when I was filling out the order form, I got brown and black backwards and ordered 200 brown rash guards.
Okay.
You know who doesn't buy rash guards?
Brown belts.
Like I've still, that was like 3 years ago and I've still got like 10 I'm trying to get rid of.
Hey, Anton, you buying it?
Yeah.
I think if you want a 30 buck brown rash guard, message me on Instagram.
Put me down, brother. I'm a fresh brown belt, so you know, I've got plenty of time to wear it.
Oh, there you go.
With my track record, I've probably got about a decade of wearing in it.
So, oh, you'll need like three.
I'll buy all 10, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. And what about sizing? Like, do you find that the mediums and the larges are the most popular? And, like, how did you go? Like, did you overorder on the smalls and the larges or what?
Yeah. So I'm not a particularly big dude. So I biased towards small medium when we started. When, like, in actuality, the average jiu-jitsu practitioner is probably between large and extra large.
Mm.
So we bias our orders that way. But the other thing is we used to sell gis. That was, like, a fairly serious vertical in our business. But we've actually nearly completely discontinued those. So we only carry one gi now. And we consistently outsell no gi to gi, probably 80 to 100 units to one.
Wow. That's massive.
And what's interesting as well with gis is gis are like a really complicated product to design. So if you want to sell gis, also anyone listening, don't. And gis are a really personal thing. So they're either too long, too short, too heavy, too light, too tight, too loose. The material's wrong, the material's right. So we found that like gis are such a fussy technical garment that it just wasn't worth the design process. They're heavy, they're difficult to ship, they cost a lot of money to get here. Mm-hmm. People don't like whimsically purchase a gi because they think it's cool. It's like a kind of aspirational purchase because they're like $200. Whereas a rash guard, like you'll just see a cool one and kind of buy it. It's like a t-shirt.
Interesting.
So we definitely moved away from gi where we only carry one for people that just need it. But otherwise we don't really carry them. So I would say to people who are going to start an apparel brand, think about that. Think about how often you buy a gi. And whether it's something you want to carry. There's brands like Shayero and AMP, obviously, that are just like gi-heavy, gi-centric brands, but they have their niche so nailed down that it's very difficult to penetrate.
Yeah. But it's so true. When I think about it, like people post up on their social media, I've bought this A2 gi and it's not the right fit for me. And I'm like, but you're an A2. But no, it's not. An A2 is not necessarily an A2. There's just so much variance, as you say, with all that stuff. So I can really understand that. I just feel like for gear companies now.
It's hard. Like I know, I think Hyperfly last year were doing split sizing, like tops and bottoms, which was definitely more useful for. I found that more women requested that just because the variance in women's body types is generally bigger than men's.
Mm.
But again, if you do now, you've doubled your SKU count if you do that. So I feel bad that they made that decision because that would be a huge pain in the ass to manage.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
Wow. And what about marketing for that? Sorry, Anton. How did you go about marketing that, especially when you first started off?
So it's sort of the same with any business in that you just have to like beg your friends for the first year and they'll like pity buy stuff off you because the first thing of whatever you do is terrible because you don't know how to do it, right? So like don't feel bad if like your first design is terrible because it just will be. So we just like dragged along. We ordered like 20 rash guards at a time and managed to get rid of them. And we had some pretty cool designs. And then we made the decision like, hey, we're going to put capital in here. So now we're going to start Facebook marketing and we're going to build this as a vertical. We're going to do a bunch of content. But yeah, it was that point when you go, all right, if we're going to make this a thing, we have to put cash or capital into it. We have to commit time and effort to it. We have to be disciplined with it to turn it from kind of a fun hobby gag into a thing that's going to make money. And it's less fun in the sense that you can't just do whatever you want, but it becomes, it's its own entity now. Like, people know about it. I was like down at the pub watching the fights a couple of weeks ago, and I saw a dude in jiu-jitsu grappling shorts walk by, which raised questions because those shorts have no pockets. So why was he wearing them at the pub? But yeah, it was still cool to see.
Very cool, man. Very cool. You're the proud dadder of a brand that you're seeing out in the wild, man. I do like
it. Yeah, I'd occasionally, like, I'll be driving around or wandering around Burley or something, and I'll hear like "Jiu-Jitsu Cat" from somewhere where someone's like recognized me from the ads or the brands. That's kind of funny.
Kim's like that. Whenever she goes to the comps and people are talking to her about Roll or Die all the time, she really loves it.
Yeah,
I do. I do.
So I don't get that, but Kim gets it a lot. So
yeah, it's all right. The price of celebrities, honey.
Yeah,
that's right. So what's next? What's the next plan for you? Are you gonna, you know, what, you're an entrepreneur? Is that, are you trying to keep that flame down so that you can not start a new project and just dial these in? Or
that's actually one of the most succinct analyses I've ever heard from someone. Yes, I've actually killed a bunch of so I had a we my wife and I welcomed a boy into the world 6 months ago.
Congratulations.
So it turns out, thank you. It turns out you can't have many hobbies with a baby.
No.
Like, it really fucks your hobbies having a baby. The baby's your hobby now. So I probably had like 10 half hobbies and now I have like 2.
Mm.
So that's been a good discipline, I guess, like discipline mechanism. And I guess like all of a sudden the stakes are a bit higher when you have a child. So you've got to think more about your harebrained schemes, you know, because little guy's at stake now. So yeah, definitely. Like, we're really focusing on rapidly scaling Jitsi now. We'll probably launch in the US seriously later in the year. There's just a few things we're going to iron out with that. There's just such a big market. And Americans just love buying shit.
Mm. Like, especially licensed things like Stranger Things. That seems interesting.
Yeah. It was crazy. When we did that Stranger Things launch, we'd never done a licensed launch before. And we didn't really know how to do it. But like, we kind of bullshitted Netflix that we did. No, but we didn't. But whatever, we already did Stranger Things live. So we sort of just turned it on and hit the ad button and just like looked back and hoped. And it was like an 8-to-1 US to Australia initially in terms of sales. Like, even with the added friction of having to ship to the United States, Americans just love it. They just love it.
Mm.
So it was really, that was really interesting.
But licensing idea.
But you're already overseas.
We sell into Asia and US and Europe and stuff. But Americans just hate paying for shipping and waiting more than 4 hours for anything. So like when you look at your conversion data with the US, there's a huge drop off because they're like, oh, thick. Yeah, I got to buy this. And they're like, oh no, it's from Australia. No. But there's no way to get around that without holding stock in the US. And then that's a whole different project you have to do.
Mm. I don't think anybody's come to like one thing that you have done incredibly differently when you were a blue belt or not is like go for the licensing angle. I don't know anyone else has done that. Everyone comes up with their own rash guard designs and does this and that. But, you know, actually going and hunting down a license, that's playing a big game. That's very interesting. So,
yeah. So, Hyperfly have started doing it now. They did a couple of things. Like, they actually stole Tetris from us. We were trying to get Tetris and they got it first, which was pretty good about. But
interesting.
In retrospect, Tetris wasn't actually that great. Once I saw someone else have to do it, I was like, shit, I'm glad we didn't do that. it was interesting doing that because you get all of the marketing from the TV show like Sony or Netflix or Paramount, who have more money than me. So like, they're going to do a better job. And if you can time it right, like we did with Stranger Things, we released our range in like part two of the last season. Remember they split it up? I think it was like a month apart. Like part two, we dropped the same time. So we just got this free ride, which was interesting because with Cobra Kai, we were supposed to launch it. They were going to do a new season around October and November last year. And there was a writer's strike, you may recall.
Mm.
So we launched ready to like ride the wave. And then there was a writer's strike and got delayed like 12 months. That was pretty annoying.
Mm.
But it still sells well because it's such a consistent, well-known brand.
Interesting.
Yeah. And with Stranger Things, like you sort of timed it around the time of the pandemic, where a lot of, well, I don't know, me personally, I was certainly watching a lot more Netflix and a lot more, like, Stranger Things really took off around the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. So it's interesting when you look at, say, how Netflix releases Stranger Things versus Amazon Prime as an example. So Netflix released the whole fucking thing in one go, right? So Stranger Things just comes out and there's like 10 episodes and off you go. And so when you look at like the interest spike, you get this sugar hit where all everyone talks about Stranger Things for like 8 weeks.
Mm.
And then no one kind of talks about it again for another 2 years. So with launches like that, you have to get the timing. Because if we launched a Stranger Things line like now, people would be like, who cares?
Mm.
Until the next season comes out. Whereas, Amazon drip feed week by week by week by week. So I think you get a longer kind of longevity, but it's not as steep. Mm.
So they don't do any promotion though, right? Like they're just dropping the show and then you line up all your marketing. It's like Stranger Things, Rash Guard. You know, and you just hope that people who like Stranger Things are who also do jujitsu are going to see your rash guard and buy it.
Yeah, correct. And like it was useful in that last season, you might recall, there was like that really bold t-shirt, which was Hellfire Club, which that one character kept wearing. So we had a Hellfire Club rash guard, which obviously mimicked the shirt. So that was like a winner because that was like the cornerstone image of that season.
Yeah, right.
And obviously, like when you do licensing, they have to approve all of your marketing, all of your script, all of your copy, all of your designs, everything. You can't just like, you know, go rogue. They approve your athletes. Anyone who posts anything on your behalf to do with it has to be approved and vetted.
Sounds good though, because those people would know well what the market wants. So it sounds like a help, not a hindrance, ultimately.
Yeah, it's beneficial in that from a legal perspective and from a marketing perspective that they've seen a few and they've been like, this one won't hit, try this instead, which is very helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really interesting learning experience. It was fun.
Yeah, very cool.
And getting back to like your jiu-jitsu gym and how it works. It sounds like, I think you were mentioning before we started recording that it's kind of like B team. So do you have like a coach? Like, do you have someone that would, you know, potentially promote you or something like that?
Yeah. So to preface this, we are nowhere near as good as B team. So please no one come in expecting that level of
the next B team, everybody, right?
Yeah. You can't take that. Don't break and stay away. So we've got a black belt, Jason Powell, who I've known for a really long time, who trains on the coast as well, who will grade us, and he drops in and coaches periodically. But generally, like between there's probably like three or four of us who like consistently train and kind of govern and manage it. We'll have a discussion unless there's some pressing topic that someone wants to work on about what we want to teach or what people are working on or what we've seen a lot of. So we still do promotions, which I think promotions are important for lower belts, and then you sort of stop giving a shit. Like the higher up you get. But yeah, like you wouldn't want to join a gym as a white belt. And I'm just like, sorry, you're never getting graded. I think that for a lot of people, unless you're a high level athlete, you wouldn't, you'd struggle to maintain motivation there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we actually have a grading day on March 30th, give out a few belts. Okay. What do you guys think about about gauntlets? Because there's been this vicious argument internally regarding gauntlets.
The whipping?
Because I like whipping people and I've only got, and I've only got one left, so I don't really care. I just want to whip some other people. But all of the younger guys just think it's the dumbest thing ever. Like all the guys under 30 think it's stupid.
I've done it. I've done it for my promotions, but I'm not really a fan. I don't see the point of it. I don't know if I'm not old school enough or what it is, but yeah, I don't. I think you've kind of already earned your belt. You don't really need to be physically destroyed anymore. That's just my two cents. Yeah. What do you think, Anton?
Yeah, I got whipped for blue, and then I kind of had the opportunity and didn't do it at purple, and then I didn't even get to roll for brown. So like, it's been three very distinct gradings, and I think that actually what I will say is that. That was in my own club that I had three different grading experiences. And I think that it's about finding the club that works for you. I think that there is something about the whipping that makes you feel real tough. If you, you know, yeah. you get through, you're like, wow, I just survived being fully attacked. And but also I think some people get it harder than others. You know, there are some people in the club who just, they don't want to be in a whipping club. They're just going to get like, people are just going to go to town on them. I think it's like one of those personal preference things. I'm not so much against it, but I also see that some people who've experienced, say, trauma, for example, it's certainly not a good thing for them to be at a club that does whipping. And they may not realize that when they come in, and then they get all the way, they get halfway to their blue belt, and whipping is the worst possible thing that can have ever happen to them. And then they'll be shamed for not being whipped. So, yeah, I see that it's probably very risky to do it in this day and age, but I still think it has a place for those people who love a good whipping. That's how I feel about it.
And look, I now strategically go to undergrading days to whip people.
Yeah.
I make sure I'm good enough friends with
you are that
Kevin
guy.
Gyms. I'm like, guys, I got like a special belt I like starch and drag behind my car and stuff.
Yeah, with like nails embedded in it.
What's that?
Yeah. I got
is the logic behind it being like a bonding experience for everyone? Is that the thought process?
I guess
for the team to, you know.
Maybe like go through the ritual, kind of like walking on hot coals, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to show that it's hard, like, because I think the origins of BJJ were this has to work above other things, you know, like this has to work in a street fight. This has to show that you're hard. Like it used to be brutal in the streets of Brazil when this stuff came around. Like people were fighting hardcore for fun all the time. So I guess it's like, show how tough you are. Let's see what kind of beating you can take. I'm guessing that's what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also,
but I mean, I don't know, maybe it's an unpopular theory, but I really think that you've already proved yourself before the grading day, you know, that's 99.9% of the time. You don't need to do anything more on that day to deserve that belt. You've already done it in all the.
I think that's a meathead guy thing. I think like a meathead guy thing.
Yeah.
You just want to beat up your boss.
It's not very inclusive. And I think the world has changed and it's time to move on. You know, we're not slapping women on the butt when they walk past anymore. And we probably shouldn't be whipping people at a grading. You know, it's like, it's time to go the next level. And because it will like make jiu-jitsu more mainstream. A lot of people would not enter jiu-jitsu if they knew they were going to be whipped. Walking a gauntlet, like that would be.
It's insane.
No, it's just
insane, right?
Not doing that shit.
But imagine any other sport, like you go and take up touch football, but if you win the finals, everyone whips you.
Yeah, just not done.
Like it's just an insane jiu-jitsu thing.
Mm. It's an insane jiu-jitsu.
It is. But we are all a little bit crazy people that do jiu-jitsu. So it kind of goes with the territory too, doesn't it?
We also had a vicious internal argument regarding whether we wear gis to grade or not, which I also lost that argument. I'm not doing very well here.
Interesting.
So we've gone completely no gi, including grading, which is interesting.
Wow.
So you were advocating for the gi.
So I was like, we should grade in a gi because it's like a suit and it's like a formal occasion, like you graduated from uni or something. And then the counter argument from the younger fellas was, we don't do any gi, so it doesn't make any sense to anyone who's looking at it if we don't do it, but we're wearing gis. And people from the outside that want to take up the sport, you look like a cheesy karate guy standing there and they just wear a rash guard like a normal person, basically.
Interesting.
So I got outvoted. I got outvoted on those, and I'm a little bit bitter on that, but I think I'll get over it.
I agree with you. I don't get it. Like the 10th Planet, when they promote, they're just holding the belt. I don't know. To me, that's not enough. But then they don't own gis either. So, sorry, Anton, what were you going to say?
Yeah. What do you do? What's the ritual? Do you hand them a rashi? This is where you can get rid of your rashis. You hand them.
Everyone's a brown belt. What happened? Yeah. Guy's been training 3 months. All of a sudden, he's a brown belt. I'm saying to get rid of some stock.
That's right.
No, I think you just give him a belt because it's largely ceremonial. You tie it around him, I guess. I don't know. I feel like the tying it around them is the weirdest thing about it, though. Like,
yeah, I agree. It doesn't.
And you always get the knot wrong. Like, and then you got it like
tie a knot because you don't know how to tie a fucking knot because you're a no-gi guy.
Backwards, and it all feels weird. So I don't think I'll tie it. Then 100 people are looking at you while you're trying to tie this knot. The whole thing's just a joke.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, our absolute Collingwood location is now all no gi, and at our club grading, where all three locations are together, they have to wear a gi, and a lot of them don't even know how to tie the belt because they're
out of place. You can tell, right?
It's like a footy player in a suit.
Yeah.
Or worse. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Absolutely.
No, well, yeah. It has been fun.
So, Nick, what do you do for your day job? We probably should have asked this at the beginning, but you talked about all your other side gigs, but what's your actual day job?
And you've got
I'm in venture capital, and I have a startup where we essentially make viral videos professionally for other companies.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So completely unrelated to jiu-jitsu.
Handy to know. That's a whole nother conversation, really.
I saw Anton's eyes light up there, so that he might take this offline.
Yeah. It's a weird job no one understands.
That's brilliant. All right, we need some viral videos for Roll or Die, so we'll be in touch.
They're all viral. It's just jiu-jitsu. You just chop them up.
That's right. So what is there any words that you would like to say to end this very interesting episode? It's been totally counter to most episodes we have. We've gone down different rabbit holes. It's been a real pleasure. Anything you want to pass on? Well,
if you want to start an apparel brand, just try it. Like, at worst, you'll lose like $500 or something for stock. Just don't mortgage the house, but give it a go. And I think with your training, just enjoy training, have fun. Like, especially if you're younger, I wish I trained more and had more fun when I was younger. I spent too long obsessing over belts and shit and not having fun, and now I'm finally having fun. They're probably the main things.
Yeah, I really like that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was our first conversation, our first time chatting, and really enjoyed getting to know you. So we will have the links to your jiu-jitsu apparel brand in our show. So if anybody wants to buy, especially any brown rashies, they can keep you up.
Yeah, please do. Awesome. And I'll flick you guys a code as well to put on there so the guys can get a discount. But thanks a lot for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Good brother. Catch you later, everybody.
Thank you so much. Anybody, if you're coming to the Gold Coast looking to drop in to 7th, what is it?
7th Circle. Don't call it 7th Heaven.
Yes. Yeah.